Good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining us. This will be the first of four town hall meetings that City Council is putting on for residents to have an opportunity to ask questions and have some clarifications on the charter amendments that will be on the ballot on November 6th. I'm going to keep it somewhat informal, but Vicki, just for the record, will you call the roll?
Fellows.
Present.
Fiebig.
Yes.
Hallam.
Present.
Lenz.
Present.
Micah.
Present.
Pismo.
Present.
Pleshnik.
Present.
Thank you, Vicki. There are three different ways for charter amendments to be brought forth to the residents for voting at a ballot, one of which is through the City Council. So per the charter, Council has the privilege to be able to formalize what they would believe to be important charter amendments and then would bring them forth to the residents for the ballot. Some of you have the paperwork in front of you. Everybody will have that in the mail with probably in the next week to week and a half. So you will also have that mailed to your homes as well. And again, after this evening, we'll have three more meetings in case we don't get to everybody this evening. I will run it as we do public portion at a council meeting, so I will time it for 3 minutes and hope that people can keep their comments to that point. We always will see how things go with that. And, of course, if you have an opportunity to come back after some discussion tonight, we would welcome that as well. Vice President Pleshnik is just going to provide some bullets on the clarity for each of the amendments, and then I will open up the floor for public portion.
Thank you, Madam President. Just by way of reference, the 9 charter amendments will appear in the ballot as issues 7 through 15, and I want to run through each one of them so you have an understanding of what they roughly mean, although you have their full text in front of you with changes. Charter Amendment number 1, as well as the second amendment, both provide for council to confirm appointments by the mayor, the department heads, as well as the board and commission members. This is already the case in our charter for most department heads. All but 2 are currently confirmed by council, and is the case for some commission members. So what this does is it applies the appointment and confirmation process, appointment by the mayor, confirmation by council, to all department heads and all board and commission members, as most of them already are for consistency. The third amendment deals with the issue of nepotism and prohibits elected officials from either hiring or appointing their immediate family members. The charter used to have a very similar standard, although it was removed from the charter in 2015. So this would be going back in large part to the language we've had since our founding as a village. What it does add, though, is a clear definition of what an immediate family member is, so there's no more vagueness. It takes that definition from the Ohio Ethics Commission and explains that that includes, of course, spouses, children, siblings, parents. And I think we can all agree that we don't want elected officials hiring their children or their spouse to employment positions in the city. The fourth amendment, once again, is about uniformity. It applies the same process for suspension, punishment, removal for every elected official, every employee in the city. This accords with the treatment of most municipalities in our area that would have one standard for all officials, both elected and appointed and hired, so that whether you're a council member, you're the mayor, you're a department head, you're subject to the exact same procedures and due process, and ensures that this process happens at a public meeting subject to the Sunshine Laws so that you don't have portions of the removal process happening outside of a meeting. You would never want that. The fifth amendment, very quickly, just changes the amount of time that council has to review a city budget, minimally from 30 to 60 days. The charter currently provides that the mayor must provide the city budget to council for review 30 days before it must be adopted by law, which is the last day of March each year. This simply doubles it to 60 days, which ensures that council has at least enough time to go through 3 readings and review of the budget. So it provides more time for budgetary review. The sixth amendment clarifies that city council has the ability to hire acting department heads as well as attorneys when there is a vacancy for a department head or there's a legal issue in court. And this is in direct response to several lawsuits that have been filed against the city on these matters, ensuring that we will never be in a position again as a city where we don't have an attorney representing us. Unfortunately, that's happened a few times in the past year. And what this provision ensures is that critical employment vacancies, especially for attorneys, can be filled so that residents and taxpayers are always represented. Charter Amendment 7 provides a consistent standard for placing issues on the ballot, whether it be recall or charter amendments, at 25% of electors in the city. You know, by way of reference, Willoughby has the same standard for their recall. They only apply recalls to the mayor. They don't allow recalls of council members, but this accords to Willoughby's treatment. Charter Amendment 8 is a prohibition on costly special elections. More specifically, it provides that we will not pay for a special election with your tax dollars unless the mayor and at least four members of council agree that that's necessary. Right now, there are many things in our charter that would trigger a special election automatically, and guess who pays for it? We, the taxpayers in Willoughby Hills. On the other hand, if we can wait for a primary or a general election, we can save a lot of money because it's already paid for by the county. And so this doesn't prevent us from having special elections, but it does allow us to have them only if the mayor can agree with at least four members of council and be accountable for the decision that we're going to spend thousands of your tax dollars to have a special election rather than just wait. And then lastly, Charter Amendment 9 defines a term in office for department heads. Although you're familiar with your elected officials, some of the most important people who serve you are actually appointed officials. Your law director, your finance director, these are the people that write the budget, that interpret the law, that represent the city. And in many cities, there is effectively a term in office for these department heads, after which they have to be reappointed and reconfirmed. And this would provide for a four-year term that coincides with the mayor, so when a new mayor comes in, they can appoint their staff with confirmation by council. But after that term's over, we have to go through a reappointment. That way, it's not just the mayor and council members who are accountable to you, it's everyone who works for you, because if they didn't do a good job in the last 4 years, maybe council and the mayor won't choose to reappoint them. And if they do choose to reappoint them, they're accountable to you for that decision. So really quickly, those are the 9 amendments. I did want, Madam President, if I may, to give a moment to Councilwoman Pigeon-Moe to just run by some research she's done on how these amendments compare to other cities.
Thank you, John, certainly.
Thank you, Madam President. So I just wanted to talk about, I believe it would be the 4th amendment or issue, I believe it would be 10, which is the uniform accountability standards for all city officials. And I just wanted to say that that comports with the law and the charters of Wycliffe, Highland Heights, Eastlake, Kirtland Hills, Mayfield Village, Richmond Heights, Wade Hill, Seven Hills, Chagrin Falls, Fairview Park, and Gates Mills. Just in my cursory research so far, I found that the 4th Amendment, the Uniform Accountability Standards, which allow for the removal of city officials who have engaged in gross misconduct, malfeasance, misfeasance, nonfeasance, violations of their oath of office. So that is pretty consistent with all these cities. And then the other one would be issues 7 and 8, which are the 1st and 2nd amendments, I believe, which are about the confirmation, the council confirmation of mayoral appointees. And that is consistent with all of those cities, except for Fairview Park, which has the confirmation of department heads, but does not have confirmation of commissioners. But the requirements for the appointment of commissioners in that city are a little more stringent than what we have in our current charter now. And lastly, going back, I believe it's the 9th Amendment, or Issue 16, I believe?
15.
15, sorry. Issue 15, it would be the department head's term limit, and this is also consistent with several cities like Highland Heights, which actually requires this every 2 years, so council has to reconfirm, and the mayor needs to reappoint every 2 years. And that's also true of a couple other cities like, let's see, Mayfield Village, and let's see, Highland Heights. Seven Hills, and a couple others. So this is not anything that is outside of the norm. This is pretty typical of other cities. Our city charter is actually outside of the norm in that it gives an awful lot of unchecked power to the executive branch in our city. And as we've seen, that has caused some problems in our experience, especially over this last year in our city. We've seen that that can cause problems. And I think that ensuring that the mayor and the executive branch and the legislative branch, which is headed by council, work together, we will be able to have a more functioning city in the future.
Thank you. Councilman Phoebe?
Madam President, thank you for the opportunity to speak tonight, and welcome to everybody for coming and for your interest. I'll offer a slightly different perspective, as I was not a proponent of the changes that were made. And let me just briefly as possible, explain why. The amendments were brought forth with no committee meetings by the council body. There was one meeting in Rules and Legislation that was called during our August recess, and I was out of town taking my son to college. So I had no prior knowledge, no ability to read these amendments or to weigh in on them whatsoever prior to that. So these were presented to the body and written from what I understood, Councilman Plutchik has said that he wrote these. And then 3 days later, they were in a special election. They were put forth, and they were passed. That was another meeting that I had a prior commitment. I believe the mayor had a prior commitment as well. And, you know, in August, that's the time when council's on recess. You typically don't plan to be in council meetings, although, you know, I usually am. I don't miss very often at all. So for the purposes of having a debate before we go to the voters and say, here is something that's been well thought out, here's an idea that we have, that process wasn't followed. So for that, I'm putting my foot down and saying, no, that's not the right way. I believe the reason that council has the authority to put a charter amendment on is for specific issues that only the council would have, like an ability or the authority or the wherewithal. For example, let's say we need to hire part-time firefighters, and we need to do it quickly, and we need to change the way the charter goes through civil service and hires those part-time firefighters. Willowick just did this, for example. Their council put that on the ballot, and that's something that a charter review commission that only meets every 8 years might not gather all that information and to do. So for that, that's one part of it. It's the process, and I believe it was the intent. Secondly, is this does adjust the power of government from the mayor form of government that we've had, where a mayor can appoint and supervise his department heads and choose those people that administer the city. It turns that into four members of council. So you have to have five people that agree. And you know that five people running a ship, you're gonna hit a bank somewhere. It's not going to work very well when you have five captains of a ship. So for that reason, I'm opposed to that as well, because it shifts the power of government. If we do want to change how our city government is run, this is fine. This is a good discussion. There's a lot of cities that have gone to a city manager. Their council president becomes like the acting mayor or the mayor, or whatever term you want to use. If we want to do that, that's fine, but let's have a long and broad discussion about that, and let's bring a group of people together, because government is by the people, not just one or two.
Thank you. Thank you. All right. So this will be an opportunity for individuals to come forward. I ask that you state your name and your address for the record. I will set the timer for 3 minutes just to try to we have some uniformity with everybody. And we will have to finish a couple minutes before 7, just so individuals have a moment to take a break before we start our council meeting at 7 p.m., which all of you, of course, are welcome to stay as well. So I will open public portion for the town hall meeting at 6:14 p.m. Anybody that wants to come first, you're welcome to do so. Joyce.
Thank you very much. I like the opportunity to speak, Joyce. It doesn't happen too often.
Thank you.
Joyce Grady, 3020 Markham Boulevard, Willoughby Hills. I wasn't too sure what was going on, so I came up to see this. And I must admit that I've worked on two charter committees 8 years apart. And I remember sitting in here and over at the community center arguing, well, not arguing, but choosing a word that wouldn't change the intent of what we wanted to do. And all of a sudden, this gentleman magically sits down and pulls it all together. I'm a little curious as to what format he did that with and what his thoughts were, because we thought long and hard how every word would change something. And I think, thanks to a law director who spent hours on the phone with anyone who had a question to try to explain what we were doing, made a whole lot of sense. And it was a very tedious process, but we felt obligated to do it correctly. And Mr. Phoebe, I agree with some of the things you said. I don't think this should have been rushed through the way it was, and just one person authorized the whole project. It's a little scary. Thank you.
Thank you, Joyce. That's okay. You could come up, Chris, but so I think if there's any questions or concerns or anybody does want to make a statement, I think usually in public portion we wait till everybody's completed, but this is a large body of individuals, and to try to get back to everybody after you've spoken first, like Joyce, would make it not as important. So just a couple points, Joyce, on your comments, and thank you. So the purpose of the Charter Review Committee is to review the entire charter. So that's one reason that it could become kind of onerous or tedious, because you're reviewing the entire charter from the front to the back. If the purpose of the Charter Review Commission is to review the charter, in the event that council has a feeling that something needs to be adjusted, particularly by the situation, some of the situations that we've encountered the last year, then it's specific to one area of the charter that would be considered for amending. Anybody else?
Madam President, just because Ms. Grady addressed me, I didn't entirely write the charter amendments. I certainly talked to many former members of our Charter Review Commissions. I've certainly had conversations for years during council meetings and with council members about the problems our city has faced. And in the last year, where we've been sued several times, not only by our mayor, but by other current and former employees of the city, I started in talking with those Charter Review Commission members to realize that our charter was part of the problem. The lawsuits were based on ambiguities in the charter that could be specifically identified and corrected. I do want to say no one person ultimately decided on these charter amendments. One of our council members said that there were no committee meetings. Actually, there was a committee meeting. There were two special council meetings on which these were voted on by all of council. Not every council member attended each meeting, but it's our prerogative to be there. And I think that it's important to note that not only are we having public hearings in town halls, we're having four town halls now, not just three as we did with the last commission. So this will be thoroughly vetted by residents, and soon enough, not only you, but every registered voter in the city will have a copy of the charter amendments mailed to them, so you'll have the opportunity to review them. There will be a long process before we vote in November, and this is part of that process. I don't want anyone to be under the misinformation that one person wrote the charter amendments. It might come from the fact that in the last Charter Review Commission, the ballot language for the charter amendments was written by one person and never voted on by the Charter Review Commission. I agree that that was wrong, but all of council voted not only on the substance of the amendments, but the ballot language here that you'll ultimately see, and the Board of Elections agreed that the ballot language was excellent and accurately represented the changes. So I think that we're in a much different position today. I don't want to take any more time because it's more important to hear from residents, but I did want to address it given our council president's request.
Okay. Chris?
Madam President, Just a quick comment. It's the second time I've heard the Board of Elections said that the comments, the questions were excellent, and I don't know what that means. It should be attributed to a certain person if that's the case.
Chris?
Chris Welsh, 38801 Chardon Road. The amendment concerning the hiring practices, there was a proposed building commissioner that didn't have his certification, so that's a no-brainer there. We all know about the fire chief story. There's nothing wrong with, I understand there's 10,000 people in the city of Willoughby Hills, and the hiring pool is pretty far, but for these other jobs, especially department heads, you can't go outside the city. Ideally, maybe you want somebody that lives in Willoughby Hills, but for a department head job, you can broaden your search, because there are other department heads that have jobs right now that I feel are not qualified to be doing what they're doing. The charter amendments in general, it should go to the voters. I mean, we have a representative democracy. You have all been elected. And as I brought up at the last meeting, if somebody out there feels they could do better, they're more than free to run. We have what we have. Whether you're whatever the majority side is or whatever side you feel, that's your choice. You can pick whoever you want to go with, whatever you feel is right. But if the majority is leaning one way, I'm not saying they're 100% right, but it seems that it still is a representative democracy. Majority wins. The amendment should be on the ballot. Not everybody's going to come out and vote. People are going to complain about it. If you're not going to vote, then don't complain. There's obviously a large group here on both sides, so these people feel strongly about this. And having the meetings, you can't make people come up here, and there's going to be people that complain. But the group that's here, obviously, whether they're for or against what's going on, feel strongly about their opinion. Personally, put them on the ballot. Let the whole city vote for it. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris.
Madam President.
Vicki? I'd like...
Can I clarify 2 points that he made? Chris made 2 points. One that I wanted to clear it up for people. There's no residency requirement in our city, so I don't know if that was clear or not. There's no residency requirement in the city.
I don't think he was implying that.
Okay. And two of the members of this body were appointed, not elected. So I just wanted to clear that up.
Vicki.
Yeah, I'm looking at ballot issue number 13. I'm Vicki Miller, 2857 Hayes Drive, about the number of registered voters and having 25% of those that are registered. I did just kind of a little search of my own community. We have 12 houses. I've determined that about 6 of those houses have residents that have been there pretty much my entire life. I was a kid, and these people are still living here, so it takes about half of them with going in and out. But I also have noticed that on the rolls, there are 3 residents that are no longer in the community stated that they are registered voters on my small street, one of which I know that has not been there for over 8 years. So how do we determine that that's good to go with all of our eligible voters when we have so many turnovers and we don't have the turnover in my community? To say that that is a fair number to go after of 20% of all eligible voters when we actually have people that are not eligible voters that are on that list.
Thank you, Vicki. And actually, if I may put him on the spot, if Mr. Fellows could speak to that as part of the Board of Election in terms of how the Board of Election determines who's registered voters, the knowledge that they have of registered voters comes from us. If someone moves and doesn't change the address, then the only other way that you determine if that person is living and residing in that city is when you go to the ballot and then the ballots are checked off. I mean, it's a huge process for voters in every state to and for the Board of Election to keep up with all the voters that are registered in a city. Some people pass away, and sometimes the Board of Elections don't realize how soon they may have passed away. So they're still might be on the books, but they're obviously not capable to vote. Am I misinterpreting your question?
No, but to me, I'm just pointing out the fact then that we are probably going to have to, that looks like we'll have to get far more than 25, 25% is far more than the actual, you know, voters that we really need to target. So that number is going to be much inflated to be able to do that. I think we are should stay with the way that it's worded currently.
The only place for a city to know how many registered voters are in it are through the Board of Elections. Dale, if you could help, I'd appreciate it.
So Dale Fellows, 2812 Fowler Drive. So the 25% issue, you have to remember, too, residents. There's residents in the community that aren't registered to vote. So
that's
right, exactly. But so, you know, as far as how many people actually live here and how many people are represented. But to get to purge, and that's the word that's used, to purge people from the election rolls is a very onerous process, although ironically, there's been other groups that have said and have challenged in the Ohio Supreme or the U.S. Supreme Court that our system is too bad, is too restrictive, and takes off too quickly. So it's kind of an irony that on the one side you want less people on the rolls, and on the other side you don't. So the process is pretty much what was described. If you have knowledge that people don't actually reside at some in your city or in that home, then you need to let the Board of Elections know. When somebody has not voted in their area for a long period of time, two federal elections, then they are sent a confirmation letter or card to their address. And if that card comes back, then we know that now we put them in a special status of confirmation status. If the card doesn't come back, but they don't respond, then we put them also in a waiting process. If they sign a petition or do something election-related, now all of a sudden the clock starts again. So it's a whole process that's used for it. Now, as far as, you know, having been on the Charter Review Commission myself in 2008, and actually I chaired that one, where some of the changes that are looked at to be somewhat consistent were done for the first time in the city because of the strong mayoral form of government. And then Mayor Wager at that time suggested we put in the confirmation process, put in the removal process because of experiences in that at that time prior to that and in the decades before. That 25% issue, when we went through it, it's pretty clear that it means electors. So there's no, to me, there's no ambiguity. I understand that this will clarify it even more. But in my mind, in our world of elections, the word elector means it has to be a registered voter. So that 25% issue is pretty clear to me. Just while I'm here, I guess, to address some of the statements that came up about confirmation, trying to get confirmations. I know Councilman Fiebig was very supportive of that process in 2008. And if you want to talk about onerous, how about trying to get confirmation of your department heads from the president to his cabinet through 100 senators, or in Ohio, 33 senators? So it's a process that's pretty consistent in U.S. government from top to bottom. I haven't heard anyone disagreeing with the actual amendments themselves, because I think the actual amendments themselves are pretty solid. Nepotism is not something you want in your community at all. And I know, again, Mr. Fiebig's been pretty outspoken against nepotism for a very, very long time, but we haven't actually gotten to the point to get it actually on the ballot. So it's now finally on the ballot. The budget issue, I know, again, hate to use Mr. Fiebig as an example, but you've been very outspoken about having budgets as early as prior to the end of the year before you get to that budget process. So I can't imagine anyone would disagree with moving it from 30 days to 60 days, which means about February 1st, which to me would be a pretty reasonable time frame to have your budget discussions. And then the rest is really consistency, and I think it was, as I mentioned before, it was our Charter Review Commission that put those on the ballot to have that confirmation process for instituted into the city for department heads and to have the removal process because of issues that have happened. You can go back as many decades as I've been around and more of problems that we've had at some point in time in those decades, and you can relate it back to the charter. And when the charter now is so skewed one way and putting the balance of power into, like most communities have and most government bodies have, is a positive thing. So the actual wording of the amendments, I think, is being lost in the discussion. I can't imagine anyone really disagreeing with the actual language of the amendments. So I hope that helps. Thanks.
Thank you.
Connie Klein, 38531 Dodds Landing. I have a question. I thought that the current language for recall petitions is 25% of the people that voted in the last general election. Is that correct?
Madam President, if I could answer that.
Yes.
The current charter in the specific provision on recall petitions says that 25% of electors is required. And the charter also defines elector as registered voter who lives in Willoughby Hills. There have been some arguments made by some residents who are circulating petitions by cross-referencing another provision that they think controls, that it's a lower amount. Our clerk and the Board of Elections have disagreed, but I don't think it hurts to clarify and say it with an example in the charter. This means 25% of electors, but it already does say 25% of electors in the charter, and electors are defined as registered voters in Willoughby Hills.
But another portion of the charter says 25% of those who voted in the last general election. I don't have it with me.
It's a different provision, and
right.
It doesn't specifically apply to recall petitions, but some have argued that for various reasons that provision somehow applies, even though the specific provision that's entitled recall petition says 25% of electors. I don't think it's a good argument myself, but I do think clarification is always helpful.
Well, my personal opinion is that it's much fairer if it's 25% of those who took the time to vote in the last general election rather than just registering and not showing up. I think that's much more representative of people who are civically minded.
But, of course, you have to bear in mind that means the number can change dramatically. If you have a very low turnout election or a very high turnout election, it can change it a lot. So there are pros and cons.
Absolutely. But it's still indicative of those who take elections seriously enough to vote.
Madam President, I'm sorry.
Thanks, Connie. Councilwoman Peasemore.
I think that brings up a good point, that there are three different ways that charter amendments can get on the ballot. And one of those ways is through the people, which is something that you could consider doing if you think this is something that needs to be changed. That might be a good thing to do a petition for. Another is by the mayor, and the mayor can appoint a charter review commission, which has been done in the past. And through the mayor's commission, there have been charter changes proposed to the voters. And then the last way is through council, and all it requires is five members of council approving of the amendments going before the voters. So there's lots of talk about how council didn't do this, and council can only put amendments if they're an emergency, or if they're about this, or if they're about that, and council has to have this meeting and that meeting and talk about it for months. But it doesn't say that. Our charter says the council shall submit to the Board of Elections the following amendments. One, any amendment proposed by a petition certified to the council. That's through the people. Two, any amendment proposed by a charter review commission. That's through the mayor's commission. So that's how the mayor is able to get charter amendments to the voters. Or three, any amendment proposed by a vote of 2/3 of the members of the council. That's it. So it doesn't say it has to be this. It doesn't say it has to be that. That's what our charter says.
I'm not addressing that at all. I'm specifically addressing the 25%
issue. Sure, and I
get that. Whether it applies to the total electorate or those who voted in the last general election.
Yes, and my point was is that if that's something that you feel strongly about, and I think that's a really good position, that's something that as a person you could do a ballot initiative.
I feel that it's already in the charter, and I think it's clear that it requires 25% of those who voted in the last general election, which is the way I think it should be, because those are the people who have demonstrated that they're civically concerned enough about their city to get out and vote. That's all I'm addressing here.
Thanks, Connie. And we appreciate that. Thank you.
Madam President, good comment. And that's a valid point, and that is a good point to debate and have a long discussion about. And that was getting back to what I originally said, which the intent, I mean, there's one sentence in there, but I believe the intent of that sentence is that there is a council committee of the whole that gets together. They have a three reading, which is pretty standard for legislation to buy rock salt or anything. And we didn't follow that process. If I could quickly just say the comment about the U.S. government and its stalemate. I mean, we're not appointing somebody for life here when we do a department head. We do hold our mayors accountable in our city for the actions of their department heads. And, of course, nepotism is one of those things that, yes, the language of the nepotism, you know, I do agree with. However, we could write legislation that would put that in place. It could also be a policy of the administration. And as far as the timing of the budget, there are mitigating factors for how long a finance director has. 6 weeks actually would have been a good date. If I had to pick, I'd say 6 weeks because that would give you three readings every 2 weeks, and that's the way the council would operate. So 60 days, 30 days, I mean 6 weeks I think would have been a more appropriate thing to put in there. Thank you.
Madam President, there's just no language in this charter that puts any of those requirements. It doesn't even require that council pass an ordinance for these. All it says is that they need to be approved by two-thirds of the members. And so we went above and beyond what our charter called for. And anyone can criticize our procedure. Anyone can do that. That's a really easy thing to attack people on. But it's really we're here to talk about the substance of these amendments. Are these amendments going to make our city better off than it is right now? And that's the question. And we can all disagree on that. That's perfectly valid. We can all disagree. It's fine. But to attack some procedure wasn't followed that just isn't required is just a little bit disingenuous.
Madam President, sorry. I think just the short discussion that just took place in front of all of us about the percentage required is a good reason for the charter amendment. It shows that one school of thought thinks it's 25% of the total electorate. Another part of the charter seems to indicate that it's 25% of all people who voted in the last election. So our purpose is to clarify that. That's why this particular charter amendment is being brought forward.
Yeah, true.
You're next.
Daniel Colette, 2601 Sam Center Road. I personally don't think that we need any of those junks. Doesn't mean we don't need any of them. Until 2 years ago, we were doing fine in this government. Since 2 years and now, I start fighting again. I say again because before Robert Weger government, we had the government, they were fighting all the time in the government. Now it started again from a couple years ago. We don't need all that junk. Personally, I think we don't need it. Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Linda?
Linda Fulton, 2990 Markham. I understand that the reason why this was put through the way it was because you had, I believe, 1 week to get it on the ballot to take it to the Board of Elections. My question is, because I have heard discussions on this, saying, well, if that's the case, then why not, why wasn't this talked about in May, June? And actually, I would like to know the timing on this. Although I agree, I do agree with the amendments. I do agree that it had to get to the Board of Elections when it did because of the November election. If it was missed, it would have to go for another year to get to the general election. And I understand all of that, but did this just crop up, all of these, at the time it did? Or was it possible that you could have talked about it back in May, June, July? So I think that needs to be answered. Thank you.
Thanks, Linda. Madam President, I can give a little bit of a partial answer to that, because, Linda, I had a similar concern myself, thinking that it seemed kind of quick to me that these amendments came up, but then I immediately answered my own question. Well, of course, council has been very busy since May. For example, there are council members that have traveled to Columbus on their own time to participate in mediation over court cases. There has also been several times when council members have been summoned out to Painesville to the court to testify in court cases. This court case and litigation has taken many of us away from our valuable day-to-day job that we really want to be able to do, but this has been a huge distraction, and it's been much longer than May. It's been a good year, year and a half, and in the absence of a law director, some of us have to do our own legal research, which involves hours of reading back in our notes, back in our minutes, to try to answer questions that perhaps we would know much better if we had legal background ourselves. So that's just part of the answer to your question.
Thank you.
Madam President, if I might follow on, the lawsuits that Councilwoman Mike is referring to are a big part of the exigency from my perspective, and I think from council's perspective as a whole. If you read the caption of the ordinance that put the charter amendments on the ballot, it reads, an ordinance providing for the submission to the electors of the City of Willoughby Hills, 9 proposed amendments to the charter to give residents and taxpayers the power and choice to reform and clarify their charter by affirmative vote and avoid future lawsuits against their city due to ambiguities. So I think it was foremost in council's mind and their legislative history intent to try to address the ambiguities in the charter and ensure that going forward it's harder for elected officials or others to sue the city based on ambiguities, but also ensure that if we are sued, we don't have council members trying to call the State Employee Relations Board or going to Painesville. We have lawyers representing us, and I think that's a real matter of exigency. It just takes one lawsuit to bankrupt a city, and I don't think any one of us want the City of Willoughby Hills to be wiped out by one lawsuit where we don't have an attorney, where we don't have protection. So I think that our experience in the last year getting repeatedly sued with more motions and petitions gave us a greater and greater sense that something had to be done now rather than done over a greater period of time. And I, for one, I'm very hopeful that this will allow us to move forward and end the fighting, because I agree, we don't need this junk. The mayor suing his own city is unacceptable. It should never happen again, and I'm hopeful these amendments will prevent it.
Madam President.
Tony.
My name's Tony, and I live at 2857 Hayes Drive. And number one, your lack of planning does not constitute an emergency on our part. So tell me what emergency there is. Is there any pending litigation right now that this is going to fix? Is there anybody threatening anything that this is going to fix? Let me answer that. No. Now, related to the number of signatures that are necessary on a petition. In our charter, in 8.23, it does say 25% of the electors. However, in 8.32, under procedures, not a whole different thing, under procedures for petitions, it says the sufficiency of the number of signatures on any petition shall be determined as being the required percentage of the number of electors voting in the last municipal election, amended 11-4 of 08. Not a different issue. Same issue. Your amendment creates it creates a possible legal problem because your amendment does not fix 8.32 or 8.33 or 3.2, what I just read. It does not fix that. It creates a conflict. It sets you up for what? A lawsuit. And you and I'm curious because right now I'm in the middle of circulating petitions for recall. And why all of a sudden now? Was this an emergency before I started circulating? Or after I started circulating? Seems like this issue came up after I had submitted our petitions informing the city that we were going to submit petitions for recall. They were never intended to be signed at that time. They were just an FYI for you. And we had to do that per state law. So you're just creating more problems. And again, I agree, and I thank Mr. Fiebig for standing up and saying procedures were not followed as they should have been.
Madam President.
Sorry, Tony.
Madam President.
Councilman Fiebig.
Thank you. Quick comment. This charter amendments have not been reviewed, to my knowledge, by a municipal law director who's an expert in municipal law or constitutional law as it applies to municipalities. There are some issues in this that do, I'm not a lawyer, never played one on TV, but I think there are some issues in this that should be reviewed by a municipal law director. Now, we do have an opportunity to appoint a person this evening. It's the third reading, and I hope my colleagues will see forth to get four of us together. The mayor has appointed somebody that is as impartial as I can ask for, and hopefully we can get that person confirmed, and he can review these. There's no guarantee, and please don't let anybody tell you that there's a guarantee in this that we will not be sued. A department head who is removed could be sued. In here it says that the council could remove a mayor. I can imagine that a mayor would file a suit and say, well, it's unfair that you're just choosing because of gross misconduct, which is a term that, you know, you're going to decide what that means. And what does punish and suspend mean in here? What is punish? How do you punish a mayor? I mean, there's some words in here that are just troubling to me, and I believe that that should be reviewed by a law director. And it also goes to the point of how hard it has been for five people to agree on a recreation coordinator, a building commissioner, and a law director. It has been more than a year since we have had this. Now, if we've got people that are politically divided and we don't agree, and you know that I've butted heads with our mayor many times, I ran against him, and that means that there are some serious issues, but we have to work together. But there still only has to be, and I've told Bob this many times, you're the boss. You're the CEO. You run the ship. Everything is, the buck stops here. And I still believe that that's the case, and that's the way it should be in our city.
Madam President, Mr. Miller asked the question, are there any lawsuits right now that these charter amendments would have an impact on? The answer...
That's not my question.
You did.
Are there any new things coming up right now? Are there any new things that these are so important that they have
Madam,
to be done right now?
Madam President, yeah. In response... I can say it's important to note that there are currently two suits by the mayor against the city of Willoughby Hills, one of which is on appeal, one of which is in the Lake County Court of Common Pleas. These amendments would directly address. The first suit on appeal was the mayor suing, saying council lacked the authority to hire an acting law director, which could represent the city, while the mayor and council work together to agree, because sometimes it does take time to bring people together, but we should still be represented in the interim. Richmond Heights had the same issue, and council hired the firm of Walter Haverfield as their acting law director. Willoughby Hills did the same thing in bringing Steve Byron, the son of Barry Byron, who actually wrote the charter for the city of Willoughby Hills and was our law director in the past. And the mayor sued the city saying he didn't want Steve Byron, he didn't want the acting law director. If this charter amendment were passed, it would be clear that council has the authority to hire acting department heads who only serve per the amendment until a permanent department head is chosen. So it's not a replacement, but ensures that we're adequately represented until that point is reached. So, yes, there are currently two suits, the second of which is the mayor arguing over, is this my power or is this the power of council, you know, to serve in representing the city vis-a-vis the union? Once again, this came up because the mayor fired Joe Gross, who is the incoming president of the Cleveland Metropolitan Bar Association and one of the most preeminent labor lawyers in Northeast Ohio, who was representing the city against lawsuits by the mayor's secretary and her union that were alleging that she should be hired back by the city even though her position was eliminated. Joe Gross was representing the city's interests. The mayor fired him. This amendment would make it clear that no, the mayor cannot fire attorneys hired to represent the city by council, which would ensure that we will be represented. So there actually are currently two lawsuits. We can't imagine how many more might come down the pike, but I will say if you're concerned that any of the charter amendments in your view conflict with current portions of the charter, it's important to note that the more recent provision in a charter always controls. So if a provision passed now conflicts, and in fact many of them do, they delete language from old parts of the charter, it's the new charter amendment that controls, because you as the people have the right to change your charter. So there's no room for a lawsuit there. But there's one last thing that I want to address, Madam President, because we talked about the importance of nepotism earlier, and Councilman Fiebig says, well, we can pass an ordinance. Well, our past law director has explicitly stated in his view the current charter prohibits us to have a higher standard for nepotism because the Charter Review Commission in 2015 deleted our standards. Now, I'm not sure I agree with our past law director, but it certainly opens us up to a lawsuit if we try to pass an ordinance that some people say conflicts with our charter. And to say we could just have a policy, when Thomas Jefferson was working on the Declaration of Independence and our Constitution, he didn't say it's okay to have the Bill of Rights as a policy. He said, I want the Bill of Rights in the Constitution. And something as fundamental as saying, elected officials, mayor, council people, you can't hire your immediate family members to work for you, that's fundamental enough that it should be in our Constitution. It should be in our charter. And this isn't hypotheticals. That's why it's so important and so urgent. The reality is we have had siblings hired. We have had children hired. We've had spouses appointed. These aren't hypos. I'm not going to mention names because we're not here to hurt anyone. But this has happened in the city. I'm happy to share with you privately how it happened, when it happened, what the positions of people were. But these aren't hypos. This actually happened. And if we don't put this in our charter, it might happen again.
Thank you. I can only take one more this evening, Doris, and then I would hope that people that hadn't had an opportunity to speak will come back in 2 weeks at 6 o'clock before the next council meeting. Doris?
Doris Dodge, 37881 Milan Drive. I have read the charter amendments and see them as a means to clarify legislation for Willoughby Hills, also to raise our city above state minimum standards. I do understand, Mr. Hallam, that you vigorously objected to these amendments, and you are entitled to your opinion. prior to the last primary election, you posted a video and stated that the community center, which is our polling place, would be closed and locked up so we would not be able to vote. I was really upset with this news, and I contacted the Board of Elections and was informed that was a complete lie. Now, Mr. Hallam, you object to having these charter amendments placed on the ballot. What would it hurt to allow residents a choice? The amendments will either pass or fail. At least we will have a choice that you don't want us to have. This certainly fits with the misleading video of the closure of our polling place. Both of these examples seem like voter suppression by limiting choices or even the opportunity to vote in the first place. We need to raise ethical standards in Willoughby Hills. Passage of the charter amendments will go a long way to ending nepotism. We are all familiar with the issues of activities at the Maple Grove Grange. Our tax dollars support this facility, yet the citizens were denied access. However, certain people could use it rent-free and even run a business out of it. I am not talking about the Scouts here. So, who do we need to be friends with to get special treatment? I looked up the definition of nepotism, which is the practice of those in power or influence of favoring relatives or friends. This is a matter of morals and ethics. Do we want leadership where morals and ethics are negotiable? Do we want to go as low as we can go? Do we want to be at the absolute minimum in Willoughby Hills? To make a parallel point, let's say you needed open-heart surgery. Would you choose a board-certified cardiac surgeon with an outstanding success record, or would you opt for a doctor who performs at the state minimum in certification and credentials? People in Willoughby Hills are good people, and we deserve to live in a community with the highest standards possible.
Thank you, Doris.
Madam President, I am going to respond. Please.
Okay.
Thank you. First of all, I just want to say that Mrs. Dodge is incorrect in what I said on my video. I never, ever said that we would not be able to vote, that the polling place would be closed. All I said was that the community center maybe looked like it was going to be closed as a result of not having any staffing, and I didn't know what that would mean for the elections. I didn't know how that would affect it. That's all I said, and that was true. I didn't know. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, so it is 6:57. I'm going to call this meeting to an end, this town hall meeting to an end. I appreciate everybody that's been here this evening and your sharing your thoughts and having your questions. If you didn't have an opportunity to speak or if you need more clarification in the next couple weeks as you read the amendments, I welcome you to come back. We'll convene in 2 weeks, which I think is the 27th of September at 6 o'clock for another around town hall meeting. And you're all welcome to stay. We'll start council in a few minutes. Thank you.